Hello and welcome to the True Blue Eye podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Steven, how's it going?
That intro was awesome.
Actually got to hear it.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. I hear it every time. No, that's not true. I usually hear it after the fact because I listen to every episode. I think that was the first time I've heard it, like, to start the recording. And that's a good way to get fired up for recording the podcast, yeah. Let alone listening to it.
So we're trying a new way to record. Please send us your feedback before or after. It should improve the sound quality. Hopefully less robotic Eric's in the middle of an episode, but we'll see.
In theory,
we'll see if it works out. Speaking of working out, except for as of like 10 minutes ago, the Dodgers have looked pretty good.
Yeah. We're not that we're, you know, broadcasting any, yeah, to say yeah. We didn't get the express written consent, but yeah, the Dodgers split a doubleheader against the Cubs. But like since we recorded last week, they've won 5 of 7. The two losses have come in the last three games, but still, you know, kind of rolling along still a little bit, 22-8 in their last 30. They play a getaway game tomorrow, I'm sure. That'll be over before this podcast goes up, but generally they're playing fairly well. They had a weird or like a really strong offensive run there for probably a good 3 to 4 weeks, and then they've kind of tailed off from that. Like they were still winning, like the last they won like three straight games last week, scoring three runs, and then they won the opener of the doubleheader against the Cubs with four. And I think this is right. So since we recorded, you know, like I said, they're 5-2. They scored 12 runs in that first game. Poor Bartolo Colon. But in the six games since, they've scored, I think it's a total of 15.
Okay.
Yeah, 15.
That sounds about right.
So it's a little bit, you know, but that's going to happen, you know.
But yeah, this feels more like ebb and flows of a season as opposed to the first month, which felt like disaster center. So.
But like what's held them afloat as the offense was carrying them while they were going through like every pitching injury imaginable. But what's sort of held them afloat of late or the last week or so is that the pitching is like starting slowly but surely to like come together. And I'm sure we'll get into that.
Well, do you want to get into that now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why not? So let's want to start with Kenta Maeda?
Yeah. Okay. So like, this will sort of be going through the rotation, but yeah. So in today's doubleheader, for instance, Kenta Maeda and Rich Hill started. Maeda, this was his second start back. Rich Hill was his first. But since we recorded, we talked about Maeda coming back last week, but he wasn't officially back. So those two guys have been activated from the DL since we last recorded. And actually, Hill looked really good. He pitched 6 scoreless innings. His like curveball was on. That you know, he looked basically like you would think Rich Hill would look, rather than the sort of.
I read a tweet, and I do forget who it was from, but citing some sort of mechanical change.
Oh, I think I saw that. I think it was Bill Plunkett. I think he must have either talked to him.
That sounds right.
He probably talked to him yesterday when they were in Chicago. It could have been over the weekend, but like, I guess Hill made in his rehab start at Rancho last week, he like struck out 10 and in just under 5 innings, and hey, no one really cares about the results, but the way the ball was coming out, he was really impressed with it, or Hill was. And so that kind of carried over into tonight, but like Maeda, he's back too. He has not looked sharp. I think his sort of activation was more, oh my God, we have to have someone up. He had a hip strain, and it was, I think, like in a perfect world, I don't think they're necessarily putting him in harm's way, but he's been like less than effective. He has like 8. I wrote it down. I got a lot of notes tonight. This is unprecedented for me. But no, 8 walks and 3 strikeouts in his 2 starts over 8 2/3 innings. And he walked 5 in his career high in the opener today. But you know, it was a weird game. The Dodgers trailed 3-1, I believe, at one point, and then they ended up winning 4-3. But yeah, so he's looked kind of bad, but it's only been two starts. Maybe it's probably just going to be a time issue with him getting back to form. But the other news, just sort of the rest of the rotation, is that, so since we recorded, Walker Buehler, who we knew left with a rib thing, he actually went on the DL with a microfracture of that rib. So
I wish the DL reports would actually say what people like.
Yeah, just right. Or if it's like, we should go full hockey and it just says upper body or lower body injury.
Yeah.
Or just, sometimes.
Or the, yeah. Groin. Like, so often it's not groin injury. It's just, or in hockey is LBI, but this is just groin.
I think too, like, Al Michaels is known for this in football. Like, he's been announcing for so long, and he's done many sports. He's obviously basically like a Hall of Fame announcer. But like, it's funny now because he just, why am I blanking on football players' names? Todd Gurley is out with a knee, you know, like, so like, he just has the body part rather than it's injured. Like you're saying. So he's like famous for that, but it's pretty good. So yeah, Buehler, I guess the Dodgers are on a road trip right now. He's going to throw a bullpen session, I believe Saturday was the latest report. So who knows after that? I don't know if they make him go on a rehab. He's still in that. Well, hey, we have to remember the question, how are we going to limit Buehler's innings? Well, here's one way. But, like, again, they also at the same time also need, like, good starting pitching. So, but then the big one, obviously, Clayton Kershaw, he's going to do a rehab start with Oklahoma City on Saturday. He had a simulated game on Monday, and there was some thought that he might just plug right into the rotation. That's what he did his last time out. It wasn't a back injury. It was biceps. But and then he went right on the DL right after, like, immediately. So I think they're being as cautious as they can with him. So they're making him do the rehab start first. And then, so that puts him basically like end of next week. They have a four game series at home against the Cubs. They're playing the Cubs a lot here. But then they play the Rockies. So it's either like the last game of the Cubs series would be like the first possible game, but I think it's more likely he pitches like that next weekend against the Rockies. So he's sort of getting close. And just to wrap it up, Hyunjin Ryu, going to also throw a bullpen session this week. I still think his timetable is like all-star break or after, but just the fact that he's throwing is a good sign. And yeah.
Was that a full strength bullpen session? Was he throwing short
distance?
I
don't think he's thrown it yet. But I think it's certainly not, it's not like, it can't be a full bore one because those are the ones. Well, A, he used to not throw bullpen sessions in between starts, but I think it's right. More, it could be like, it might just be, let's see what you have, but it's probably going to be some subdued somewhat. And just to remind everybody, he tore the groin off of his bone. Yeah, exactly.
Out of groin, as we say. So the injuries are not limited to the pitching staff.
Oh well, and are not limited to the starting staff. Oh. Like, oh, but no, cool. You're right. Yeah. generally, you're right though.
Sorry. Yeah. Because we're going to be talking about some relievers too.
So since last week, Pedro Baez went on the DL. He has right biceps tendonitis, same as Kershaw had. Tony Cingrani had shoulder inflammation. He was already on the DL, but he had a setback. So he's sort of like up in the air. And I think I read too, I didn't put it in our notes, but Tom Kohler, who's sort of been out of sight, out of mind, he had a setback too in his shoulder rehab. So he's like, he's another like guy probably not back till August. I don't know. Yeah.
So what's really interesting here is like, so a couple of years ago, the Dodgers were DLing all the time, but so many of those felt like little finagling maneuvers, like, oh, we can do this, so we will. None of these feel like that. Almost none of these feel like, oh, we can get an extra player kind of on the roster and kind of keep the bullpen fresh. These all feel like super necessary.
I think that's right. Yeah, like, and you know, there's still going to be the ones where it's like they are going to play it cautious with some guys, and like every opportunity they get, sure, they're going to take. But
especially
but
with
still,
it being
like, I mean, look, game, like, yeah. Not all due respect, like Caleb Ferguson is still in the rotation. And so, and look, yeah. he's like done about as well as you could hope, but you know, yeah.
My mother and stepdad went to that game, and I got a message. Who is this? Who is pitching? And my mother, diligent Hello. Listener to the podcast. Hi, Mom. Follows the team a lot. So when she doesn't know a player, it does mean, you know, yeah, we're on the runs here.
I guess the
her follow-up tweet was, he's not doing very well.
Wait, was she disseminating information? okay, good.
No, I hope not.
With Baez, he makes 16 different players to go on the DL this year, including three different people twice. So like, you know, they've been in the high 20s in players on the DL the last 2 years, each of the last 2 years. So, they set an MLB record with 29 in 2016. So, it's easy to say, look, the season's not half over. They're going to blow past that because the key here is different players. So like, it's really hard to get those like other players on the DL. Like it could just be the same guys repeating or just longer DL stints for guys. But it's been an injury plagued year. I haven't like calculated like the man games lost or whatever. There's a site that does that, but like they're pretty high up there for sure. But then the last thing on the injury front, Chase Utley supposed to be back like this week. Roberts mentioned over the weekend that he's going to be activated during the Cubs series. They've already played two of the three games against the Cubs series, and they have a left-hander going on Wednesday on Wednesday. So it doesn't make a ton of sense to activate Utley for that game, unless they just want him on the bench, which is certainly possible. But I would say by the weekend against the Mets, he'll be activated.
Injuries aren't the only thing affecting the Dodgers, especially the pitching staff, just not being very good. I have today's game kind of on the forefront with Brock Stewart. But you wanted to talk about how he's kind of been going up and down. I would imagine largely just because he hasn't been very good this year.
Well, all that and like, because so a couple times he was, it was weird. Like I don't know. He was like stretched out as a starter earlier in the season when like it was assumed that he was like sixth on the depth chart, you know, basically. And then they went like Ross Stripling over him. And then it was like, you see why his fastball like velocity is down.
And that was a thing they didn't like doing the last couple of seasons. They really liked trying to keep Stripling in the bullpen as much as they could and use Brock Stewart as that spot start kind of guy.
Yeah. And like, he just hasn't been effective basically. So he had that shoulder injury to start last season and he just hasn't been the same, just been pretty mediocre. He was, the Dodgers played their third doubleheader of the season. They were rained out Monday in Chicago. And then the deal with doubleheaders now, it's just been that way for maybe 3 or 4 years. I forget when they instituted this, but you get to have a 26th man for the doubleheader. So like if it's a doubleheader that got scheduled in advance, say like the Dodgers were rained out earlier this year in San Francisco, in April, and then like 3 weeks later they happened to be in San Francisco again, and that's when the doubleheader was. Since the teams had time in advance, they were allowed the 26 man for both games. If it's a situation like this in Chicago, they only allow the 26 man for the second game. It's a weird technicality. I think the theory is, and I haven't really studied why or like if this is even effective, but in theory, the home team is closer to its affiliates. I have no idea if that's true, but at least has the ease of being able to call people up quicker. So like if you don't, they don't want to have a team have that advantage. So like in theory, if that game got rained out, a Cubs minor leaguer who was going to get called up as the extra person could be there quicker than a Dodgers person for like the first game, which is like a hastily planned thing and it's a last minute thing, so you understand it a little bit. But anyway, that's the backstory on the 26 man. So Brock Stewart was that 26 man for the Dodgers, and he ended up pitching in the second game, which was tied going into the 10th. He started the 10th, gave up a leadoff triple right away off the wall at Chris Bryant, and then intentional walk later, and then a single, and it's over. So he got the loss. They haven't announced anything, but he's going back to the minors tomorrow. That's generally how it works. You're up for a day and then gone. But I thought this was interesting because it's the sixth different time this season that Stewart has been in the majors. So like, and technically this is a roster semantics thing. He's technically not getting optioned, I believe, tomorrow. He's just getting returned to the minors because it's this weird thing where like, if you're, they use this as Walker Buehler earlier. Like if you've been optioned, you can't get called up within 10 days unless you're replacing an injured person. But like, this is like an exception to that. So like in the middle of your 10 days, you can get called up as the 26th man and then go right back. And it just like pretends like that was a day that didn't happen in your option. It's a weird, baseball is weird, man. That's what, anyway, but so yeah. So basically getting sent to the minors six different times this season, and that doesn't count spring training when he was initially sent to the minors. So I looked at it. He debuted less than 2 years ago. It was the end of June in 2016. He was optioned, four times that season and then five times last season. And last season he had the shoulder injury. He was on the 60-day DL till June. And then if you look at it, like major league rosters, you really don't option guys in September because there's no minor league team for them to go to. And plus there's roster expansion. So you could like – basically have a guy on the active roster and just not use him. You don't really have to option him because there's no real roster limits. So, well, there's 40 instead of 25. But so basically, Brock Stewart has only, for effective purposes, he's been like with the Dodgers, like as an available pitcher on the 40-man roster for like eight baseball months. And he's been up in the major 16 different times. So like, think of that, like, twice a month since he's been added to the 40-man roster, when he's been healthy, he gets called up and then sent back down. So like that's like this crazy transient lifestyle. I mean, but it beats like, you know, being in the majors and not getting called up, right? Like, so it's not the worst. It's just something you have to deal with, and that's sort of part of being, you know, sort of making your way. But then I noticed too, Breivik Valera was the guy who got optioned today when Rich Hill was activated. And he's been in the majors five different times. So this season. So a couple years ago, Danny Colom got optioned six times. And then I remember Blake DeWitt was optioned five times in 2009. I can't remember someone getting optioned more than that. So basically Brock Stewart, Breivik Valera, they've been riding the up and down yo-yo, back and forth from Oklahoma City, and it's been kind of amazing, but it was one of those like weird quirks of baseball.
Question time. Ready?
Absolutely.
First question, Brandon Johnson. Longtime asker, Brandon Johnson.
Yeah, a regular.
Everyone wants big name guys like DeGrom in hand, but what is one realistic starter and reliever you can see the front office targeting?
Yeah, so you know, that's the thing, like we always talk about on the offensive side, everyone, what about Manny Machado? What about Manny Machado? Like, and so those are the sort of ones that are going to be sort of talked about. Brad Hand is under contract, really good reliever for the Padres, closer for them, has a good contract, and so the Padres are going to ask for the moon. Jacob DeGrom is basically like one of the top 5 to 10 pitchers in baseball at worst. And so I think I don't have it in front of me with DeGrom, but he's like – either I think two more seasons after this under team control. So like you're basically looking at like top of the line type of a deal. But like you said, outside of those guys, I did go through and just sort of went like MLB Trade Rumors had their top 50 sort of trade deadline targets up. I perused that a little bit, but then I was looking at it and like the most, the starters to look at, there's really only a couple. Cole Hamels is on that list, but he makes like $22.5 million this year, and his option for next year has a $6 million buyout. So even with like if they get him at the end of July and it's reduced enough to where they can fit that under the cap, that $6 million buyout gets folded into. Actually, you know, I'm pretty sure it gets folded into this year's number. So like he, even without that buyout, he's like not feasible from a luxury tax perspective. But also it seems far fetched. So the two guys I think, are J.A. Happ, of the Blue Jays, who's making $13 million, also a big number, but can sort of be worked with. I think they could fit that in the prorated share of that, you know, less than half. But then also Tyson Ross, another, really this depends on how much the, there's going to be a lot of Padres that I'm going to mention, and it really depends on how much they're like going to play hardball. Because he's going to be a free agent. He's on a really cheap deal. So they don't, it's a matter of like, do they think they could sign him long term or are they just going to lose him? So maybe you have a little bit of leverage there, but he's only making a million or 1.75 million. He has a little under 3 million left in incentives, which is basically his number of starts that's left on his deal. So very easy to add him in. But not sure how expensive he could be. He has a terrible injury history, but he's been effective this year. So that's kind of a guy I could see them on the low key going after. As far as relievers, I know I didn't put him on my list, but people have equated like Zach Britton as well to the Dodgers. Also expensive, also terrible injury history, and just barely coming back from that. But I think his teammate on the Orioles, Brad Brock. He's feasible. He has a high walk rate, like over 12%, but pretty effective. He's making a little over $5 million. You know, another like free agent to be is, or almost free agent to be, Joakim Soria, which is weird because he was part of the three-team deal that got Scott Alexander to the Dodgers. So technically, like depending on how it worked out, the Dodgers could have added Soria if they wanted him. He's making $9 million plus has a $1 million buyout and a $10 million mutual option next year. So, but he's been really effective. But so, like, he's another guy that it would probably take some maneuvering to fit him in, but they could do it. And then Yuris Familia with the Mets. He's making just under $8 million, been really effective, though. So, those guys would take some maneuvering, but I think those are like the guys who are either free agents to be. Those are the most likely. I made a list of guys who are like less likely that are relievers, but most of these guys are like guys with like a couple years of arb left, and so they could certainly go after those people, but it just seems like a little more, they might be part of a bigger deal. But like, so just going down the list, John Morosi of MLB Network said Ryan Tepera with, I don't know how you pronounce that last name, but with the Blue Jays, there was major or trade interest building in him with him. So he's a guy making barely over the minimum and he has 3 arb years left. So pretty good numbers, but like, you know, how much are the Blue Jays are going to want? And also, is he a difference maker? Like the Dodgers just need like healthy arms, basically. They're certainly going to add someone probably to the bullpen. But like, I don't know if they're going to go out of their way, but some of these guys might be, you know, possible, like Michael Gibbons in Baltimore, also 3 years left. Craig Stammen with the Padres has less of a, he only has a 2-year deal or 1 year after this year, but he's only making $2.25 million this year and next. So he's super cheap. So the Padres could just keep him. Kirby Yates, another cheap guy with 2 arb years left, great peripheral numbers, really good peripherals, great nominal like numbers too. His ERA is under 1. So those guys are possible. Nate Jones with the White Sox too. He has an option and then like 2 mutual options after that. A little more expensive but doable. Blake Treinen, he has 2 arb years left. He's with the A's now. Kyle Barcalo with the Marlins, excuse me. He has 3 years after this year. Keona Kella with the Rangers, also 3 years after. So those guys are like possible guys, but I know that's kind of a long list. But, you know, I think those other guys are more likely. Maybe it's part of a bigger trade. I don't know. But I just think those are sort of rumored around.
The second question, which is the fourth question, Roscoe P. Coltrane asks, pretty sure LED, the Dodgers, amongst several other teams, would have provided trade packages similar or better than what Kansas City received for Kelvin Herrera. Do you find it peculiar that Kansas City would precipitate such a trade of this caliber of a reliever? One of these $10 words he's throwing around making me say them.
So, yeah, and Roscoe's another one who contributes quite a lot to our question, so thanks for that. I just think
what I've always sort of dug into this is like similar to a degree, but clearly Kansas City valued something high from when the package they returned
got back. Yeah, and so like especially in this deal, there were no top 100 prospects among the three guys they got back for Kelvin Herrera. Excuse me. But I was reading from Rustin Dodd in The Athletic. Dayton Moore's quote was, "I only know how we see them, and I only know how they fit our group." So it's really like clubs, like, they're going to value players differently than like the consensus sometimes. And it's not as easy of a plug and play to say, well, the Dodgers could have sent these three guys and they're clearly better prospects. And like, but maybe Kansas City didn't see them that way. So I always sort of default back to this. I remember one of Dodgers executive, this was probably like a couple springs ago or something, just randomly, just sort of shooting the shit a little bit. He said, we're talking about trades or something. I forgot how it came up, but he said, there's so many moving parts to a deal. And he said, it's a minor miracle anytime a trade actually gets completed, just because it's such a long process. It's not as easy as like picking up the call and going, what about these guys? Okay, done. Like, yeah, like they're, you know, like that's in just certain deals, but or every deal, but like, there's just so many things that can go wrong. And let alone like matching up on a deal. And so I'm not trying to like discount like trades still happen, but like it's not as easy as just saying, well, why didn't we just offer these three? These are clearly better, because it doesn't always work that way. And this is a separate thing. And I don't want to, I'm not like calling out Roscoe on this, because it wasn't his question's intent and I didn't read it that way. But just in general, this sort of evaluation. I don't like the concept of people trying to win trades. I put that in quotes, because like, well, you know, teams are filling different needs, right? Like the Dodgers might need a reliever, and it doesn't mean you have to give up. You shouldn't go into every trade thinking I'm going to give them nothing. You know, nothing that's ever going to, I'm going to give them you obviously want to give the least amount possible and get the most back. Yes, I get that. But like, it's in a working relationship, like that team should also get something out of the deal. Like, it's just how it works. Right. And it doesn't mean like you obviously traded a better player. That happens sometimes. There are bad trades, certainly. But like, just because like if a player develops with the new team and ends up exceeding what the other team got, that's great. But still, what the team needed at that time was pretty important. And like, it's just different teams are in different spots. Like, it's really hard to like, I don't know. It bugs me. It seems like, and like, again, not calling out Roscoe, because this is not him, but like people who generally try to like win trades are like, they just think they're in the cast of the Boiler Room. And it, you know, it's just like this weird, like, attitude that like, it just bugs me, I think, more than anything, because I don't look at necessarily trades like that. Obviously you're always trying to maximize. We get that. But like, just you also have to give up something at times too. And while that someday might, like if you just think of it this way, if the Dodgers are a competing team, which we think they're going to be, they're not certainly not playing as well as they did the last couple years at this point. But if they're at a point where they're like going for a championship right now, what they're trying to upgrade, like those are always like the marginal wins, right? Like, you're trying to get those extra wins. And like the theory is like, you should be giving up players to a team that's selling, say, that's going to eventually turn into something for that team. Like, that's how it works, right? Like, it's not like always trying to, this guy, we could lose so-and-so because he's going to turn into this. So like, that's what happens sometimes. Like, there's going to be like a crunch of guys they have to like add to the 40 man roster. We probably get to this in the second half of the season, but like there's going to be a roster crunch coming up. And like, I think they might have to deal with that in some of these trades at the trade deadline. So we'll see how that goes.
Could you go into that a little bit more? What you mean by a roster crunch in the 40 man, for our listeners who aren't aware of what you mean by that?
Yeah, so I wish I don't have the list in front of me, but there's like a number of prospects who like have to be, they have to be added to the 40 man by November. It's like I think it's like usually the 20th of November. It's basically if you're a prospect who's been in an organization for 4 years or three if you're in college, or I forget if it's four or five or three or four. Anyway. But the theory behind it is, like, if you're not on the 40-man, you're eligible for the Rule 5 draft. And so this is a risk-reward type thing. Some guys are, you know, willingly left off because the team doesn't think another team is going to draft them and keep them on the major league roster, et cetera. But, like, just last year, the Dodgers added Dennis Santana and Trevor Oakes. They ended up trading Trevor Oakes in spring training, but those were the two guys they added to the 40-man last year. It happens every November because if they didn't add those, they would have been subject to the Rule 5 draft and they could have lost them for basically nothing. So there's a number of guys who they have to add this November. You know, some more important than others, but, like, you know, there's always going to be, like, free agents who depart and stuff. But I think those kind of things, like – add up at like there's a certain point where, like, you know, there's a lot of players that could, who are probably on the 40 man now, who could easily be not on the 40 man. So I'm not saying they're like at a critical point, but if you look at some of the, just looking ahead, especially if they do bigger deals, some of those names might be the ones who get traded, just because, or players getting traded to make room for some of the guys who are going to end up getting added. It's a consideration. It's not the biggest consideration, but it's just something to think about.
Next question from another regular on a roll here, Tommy Blackjack. With so much starting pitching soon to come off the disabled list, is the team more likely to look at adding offense at the deadline?
So this question is sponsored by Dr. Pepper. I would say, I still think I think they're going to add both, but like just given what we're talking about with the state of the pitching rotation, even if with guys like on their way back, they're still going to add pitching, even
if it's
just,
they're going to stay.
Right. So like, I don't think it's more likely they add offense. I think it's more likely they add both. Like we talked about this, they have some flexibility as to where they would add that offense because of, like, specifically like Chris Taylor's versatility and a lot of other guys. I just think they're going to add both, but I think if you pin me down and said, what are they most likely to add? I think it's pitching.
Starter reliever. If you think it's only going to be one.
Oh, wow.
Or let's put it this way. What are they going to prioritize? Where are they going to put most of their chips behind?
It's a good
question. If you had to guess. Obviously, it'll depend on what comes there. But what do you think, when it's all said and done, who do you think the biggest add would be? A reliever or starter?
Probably a starter. But, like, okay. I think they'll end up adding, like, three guys. Like, sure. I mean? One of each. Like, but, yeah, I probably a starter, I would imagine.
I guess I'm just looking at, if you look at last trade deadline, they added relievers and starters, but the name of the deadline was Yu Darvish.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Next question from Mike via email. Look into your crystal ball. Who's starting at second base for Los Angeles when the playoffs start?
Look,
hopefully somebody.
wait, what if they didn't? They just
what a month. What a month ago we were talking about who the Dodgers were going to sell at the deadline.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's one of those, like, let's just have them get there first. So, but look, they've been incredibly, like, stubborn might be the right word, or just like they've shown a lot of confidence in guys. It worked with Jock Peterson so far. They've shown a lot of confidence in Logan Forsythe. He's my answer. I think it's going to be Forsythe.
Logan Forsythe is my answer.
Right now, he's only hitting 219, 273, 328 on the season. And this is after like a relative hot streak. So like, but like, just, I just think they like what he brings to the table. He's not going to start every day. He's going to get a lot of games against, like, you know, he's off. But he's going to be the regular second baseman, I think. And like I said, we talked about the trade deadline. They could address that, you know, at the trade deadline. But, like, I just think I'd put my eggs in the Forsythe basket if I'm guessing at second. But, like, I did look it up. He was 3-for-4 with two doubles in the second game of the doubleheader. Today, in his last 26 games, Forsythe is actually hitting 299, 360, 442 with eight doubles. So not terrible, actually productive. So not saying he's going to do that going forward, but it's something. And that's with how he's sort of performed at the plate. It, you look for anything at this point.
Chad Smith wants to know, is the National League West now a two-horse race, or one of San Francisco, Colorado, or San Diego get back in the race? If it is just a two-horse race, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much of a fight will Arizona put
in? So, I think it's a two-horse race. The you know, I still, at the beginning of the season, I thought it would, was more of a four-ish horse race, in that the mm-hmm. Giants and the Rockies would hang around. Man, the Giants are like going through some stuff, man. Like, so like just tonight, like Hunter Strickland got mad on Monday because they blew a 4-0 lead and he punched a wall and with his pitching hand like an idiot, and he broke his hand. So he's out 6 to 8 weeks. Evan Longoria got hit by a pitch. He's out like 6 to 8 weeks. So they're struggling, man. They've been outscored and they're like still hanging around 500. I don't know if they're going to last. The Giants, the Rockies spent like over $100 million, I think, on their bullpen in the offseason, and they're the worst bullpen in the majors. So it's shocking, like how bad the bullpen is. Like you could say, look, it's Coors Field or whatever, but like those guys have just been bad. Like, and they should be a lot better, and their offense has been bad. So like, I just think it's the Diamondbacks who are going to be the main competition. And how much of a fight? I mean, come on, they're clearly going to be like, you know, in the race. Like the Dodgers haven't even caught them yet. The closest they got was like a game and a half.
I think the other thing to remember is that as we've seen over the last few off seasons and trade deadlines, that Arizona, whether it's explicit or not, is clearly trying to kind of shoot a gap for like as long as Greinke can keep giving them fairly mm-hmm. good value. Amongst other reasons, and they've been willing to issue assets to get JD Martinez last year. So I expect them to be aggressive at the deadline. Their names got linked to Manny Machado. Look at that, saying his name right. I read earlier today, and you know, that could just be, you know, a bunch of smoke and doesn't actually add up to anything. But I think they're going to try really hard this year, next year for sure, to go at it. So I expect a good race that hopefully the Dodgers win. Hopefully we have a starting second.
Also, they have a bullpen cart, so they're going to clearly be in until the end of the season.
Final two questions from Twitter, at least, or from Scott Lewis. His first question, very simple. Any update on Urias?
Yeah, so I looked at him. The last thing I saw was in the last week of May, he threw off a mound, and I think that was the first time. But I'm in the same boat with Urias as I have been for most of the year. Anything you get from him this year is a bonus, and to expect him to be a contributor is probably far-fetched. Like, he could come back and be pretty good, but like, I think this year at best, he's like a late bullpen addition in September with the hopes of possibly being a playoff contributor, but that's about it. But I think they're still taking the long view with him and making sure he's right before he's even considered to come up.
Last question from Scott, and we haven't had a question about this in a while. I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything about how AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner could facilitate the Dodgers being back on TV in LA?
Yeah, so actually, before, I forgot. This
is the great thing about being a Dodger fan in Kansas City, by the way, is I see them all the time.
Right, and I'm someone now, I have Spectrum, so I have the station, so I have Sports in LA, so I see them as well. But before I answer that, I just forgot. Talking about all the Dodgers injuries, Brandon Morrow, who was a Dodger last year, and is now he signed a big deal with the Cubs, and he's their closer. The Dodgers won the first game of the doubleheader on a Tuesday because, he just didn't appear. He didn't pitch the ninth. Because he injured his back while taking off pants. that's a Dodge. Like, he's an honorary Dodger, like, still, in my opinion, because of that. So I forgot to bring it up earlier, so I just want to drop that in there. The Time Warner deal. So AT&T, their merger with Time Warner was, like, okayed, I think, by the FCC. It was tied up in court, all this. But and so everyone sort of assumes, like, oh, well, now that AT&T owns DirecTV, and DirecTV is the biggest sort of provider that does not have Sportsnet LA. And everyone's assumed, well, now that, you know, AT&T has Time Warner, and then it was Time Warner Cable and Charter who merged, and Charter runs the sort of distribution for the Dodger network. Well, now it should be like an easy fix that where they can come together, but it's still like a company operating in its best interest for profit. And Meg James in the LA Times sort of summarized this. Her thing was, said AT&T is not expected to pick up Sportsnet LA after it buys Time Warner, according to two people familiar with the situation who were not authorized to discuss it. And then, she mentioned too that the Time Warner purchase added to AT&T's quote staggering debt load, and analysts expect that AT&T will be looking to slash costs, not add new ones. So it's not as easy as just saying, well, now we're under the same roof, because they're not really technically still, and it's still like a business operating trying to justify every cost. And the thinking is that what the Dodgers what Charter wants to carry the network is too pricey from a network or from a carrier perspective. So that there is sort of the same boat as it was, even though this sort of merger is going to happen. So it's still pretty depressing for Dodgers fans. So not going to happen.
And now questions from Craig, and he's going to cover our baseball question or baseball card question of the week as well.
Coming oh, nice.
In the middle here.
I was just thinking we should get a theme song for Craig.
That'd be fun. I've thought about it. I have to talk to my brother, see if he can work one out. It'd have to be very sort of dreamy, kind of like light. It's a good way to end the episode. It makes me happy. So
I agree.
Question the first. Will Justin Turner reach 10 home runs before two other Dodgers have hit 20 home runs?
Okay, yes. So I agree with you. So look, just to lay this out there now, Justin Turner right now has 2 home runs. He missed the first 40 games of the year with a wrist thing.
With a wrist.
That's right, with a wrist. So the Dodgers right now, Max Muncy, of course, leads them like everyone predicted. And then he has 13 home runs. Cody Bellinger and Matt Kemp have 12. Yasmani Grandal has 11, and Kiki has 10, which Kiki is still pretty amazing because it's not part time, but it's not every day that he plays, so he's still up there. So they have 5 guys with 10, and it's before the halfway point. So the closest one needs 7 home runs before to get to 20 before Turner adds 8. So yeah, I agree with you. Craig said, "Will 2 guys get to 20?" I say no. I think Turner beats them.
Snow cones, single flavor, or give me as many as I want.
Oh,
syrups on the ice.
So this is an old Little League treat, obviously.
Just on the record, shaved ice is way better than snow cones.
Okay, but isn't it like generally like the same thing? Like it's under the same umbrella.
Snow cones are much harder packed ice.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I would
my
probably
the same for both.
I would probably go with multiple flavors. I don't like this now in like sodas, but like I was a big fan of the Suicides back in the day, mm-hmm, where you just combine them all, and that works especially with the snow cones. I think where you probably have to have at least 2, if not like 3 to 4. 3 or 4 is probably too many, but like at least 2. So like I'm on board with multiple flavors.
Lemon lime. Straight up lemon lime.
Oh, okay.
Lemon on half, lime on half.
For me, like it needed to be as artificial as possible. So like there had to be a blue somewhere in there. I didn't, even if it was like blue raspberry, which is always like a mind trick. Like that's not a real raspberry, but.
The things that are fake, there's like dragon's blood or something like this. What does that eat?
Exactly. So like I would go for those. But yeah, either way, snow cones are great.
Over under of 10. How many World Cup matches will you watch from tomorrow, that's the 20th, to the final match? For the purposes of this question, 20 consecutive minutes of any point at any point constitutes a watched game.
And he says,
so here's a question, like, how focused do I have to be on those 20 minutes? Because they're going to be on a lot, like,
oh yeah,
at bars I'm at, and I'll be like tuning in. Wait, for, you know, 20 minutes.
Do you go to bars in the morning? Some of these games are like super early.
I was at pub trivia today in Japan versus Colombia. Is that who was playing today? But again, for 20 minutes, I glanced at the score and, you know, see if someone scored, I glanced over.
I have to look. So I think
it was, yeah, Japan won 2-1.
So starting with the 20th, I just want to get a gauge of like how many actual games there are left. So if I...
A lot.
Okay. And his over-under was 10.
Yeah.
So let's just see. It goes through... Wow, so wow, 20... Good God. So just group play goes for 9 more days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's I think it's got to be over.
It'll
for
be
me.
Over. I love soccer, football. I love putting it on kind of sort of in the background. It's a great sport for that.
It's a great background noise sport, but also, like, you're right, having it on, you're going to pay attention roughly like to it enough.
At
to,
least
to
starting
know.
In the quarters, you know, so that's...
Yeah, and so, like, I would say for sure...
7.
Which for
if you
sure
watch quarters on, that's 7 games, right?
4, yeah, 2, so yeah, so like I think for sure over yeah, 10.
Over it is. Yeah. Question the fourth. First addition to the 25-man roster, the Dodgers 25-man roster, who is currently not in the Dodger organization. Will that happen before or after July 4th?
Who's currently not in the... It has to be after July 4th. We're already at the 19th of June. They could certainly trade for someone, or like they just signed
signing someone.
They signed like Drew Hutchison to a minor league deal.
But it has to be on the 25-man roster. First addition to the 20, first person to make the 25.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, like, but so right, like right. He's a guy who's like who's the kind of guy who would fit this. Like,
sure.
If they sign him tomorrow,
to make sure you heard,
and that. And then eventually call him up. So like, but I still think it's after the 4th.
I'll go before.
Ooh.
July 3rd. It's gonna happen.
Nice.
This is our baseball pack. I still have baseball packs, but Craig asked it for us, and I like this question. The 1989 Topps All-Star rookie team. Bob Guerin was the catcher.
Uh-huh.
Winning manager okay. this morning, Bob Guerin.
Yeah, current Dodger bench coach. Yeah.
Can you name 4 other players on that team?
Wow. okay, so I
have the team in front of me.
For
the listeners who do not know, it's a all-star rookies, so it's one for every position, which is 3 outfielders, the rest of the offensive positions, a right-handed pitcher and a left-handed pitcher.
And then, this is for the year 1989, not the baseball card 89, right?
I am fairly sure that's how it works.
Okay, so I have to go, I'll start with... I feel like there's probably someone who's obvious. Oh, okay. So Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah. So a player named to, in this case, the 1989 All-Star rookie team had a 1990
okay, good.
Topps baseball card trophy.
So Ken Griffey Jr. is my first pick.
He was going to give you a hint that says one of them is a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
And you were correct. One outfielder is Ken Griffey Jr. To give you an idea, I have heard of 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of these
players. Oh, God. Okay. And then I would say, Jerome Walton won NL Rookie of the Year, so I'll go with him.
There you go. You have 2 outfielders.
Okay. And then this is where it gets tricky because I don't remember who won the American League Rookie of the Year. Oh, wait. But let me think. No. Okay. Ruben Sierra was not a rookie. Oh my God. And then, so Frank Thomas, I think, was drafted that year or maybe made his debut in 90. So in 1990, he had the weird, the Topps card, but he was wearing an Auburn uniform because he was just their number one pick. So not him. Okay. And then, damn it. I think Biggio played in 88, and he already said 1 Hall of Famer, so it's not Biggio. Oh, my God. This is kind of torture. Roberto Alomar played in 88, so what about Sandy Alomar?
No.
Damn. Okay.
Sandy Alomar was 1990.
Mm.
I'm going to give you some hints here.
Okay.
The right-handed pitcher was for the Kansas City Royals.
Okay.
I don't know how much of a hint that is.
He played
for the Royals long enough that that's a hint, I think.
What is it? Kevin Apier?
No.
Is it Jeff DiMicco?
It is not.
Oh my god!
This is a person who started as a starter.
Jeff Russell,
probably more known as a very good closer.
Is it Montgomery?
Nope.
Not Jeff Russell.
Or perhaps he's best known to Dodger fans as a father.
Oh geez. Okay. Well, now that like throws me off because I can't.
Father of D. Gordon, Flash Gordon.
Flash. Okay. Nice. Okay.
Left-handed pitcher for the California Angels.
Oh, that's Jim Abbott.
There you go. See. Yeah. All right. So we'll give you that one.
Yeah.
The shortstop, the Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh, Pat Listash.
Nope.
No. Oh, Gary Sheffield.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. All right, okay.
I'll finish him off now. Now we're getting to the harder names. Carlos Martinez was at first. Greg Jeffries at second. Craig Worthington, third base. Greg Breeley and as an outfielder, and that's it. That's the team. You name the rest. So.
Okay, good. I got the important names.
Yeah. So that's the show.
Wow. It kind of ended, we went through a lot tonight, I think.
We did.
Yeah. So, we will, Dodgers are on the road this week. Then they're back home. We're going to talk a lot about Cubs games, I think, by next week because they finish up a series on Wednesday in Chicago, and then they play them for four games next week. Oh, and speaking of TV, I think three of those four games are on ESPN, including – I think the Monday and Wednesday games are national games, which are not blacked out in LA. So you actually might get to see some Dodger baseball pretty soon. But anyway, yeah. So going to be a lot to talk about, I'm sure. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.